Good morning. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew, of course, is my student, and I haven't signed his thesis yet. I will do that in spring. So we agreed that he will let me talk 10 more minutes because Brad Jordan can go have beer very happily, you know, anyway. And Okay, I need to recognize my two co-authors that actually are the authors. Josh Anderson, this is mostly his super master thesis, but the SOB decided to get married and get a job and make money, so he said he didn't have time to come. So that's why I'm speaking. And Dr. Hack is busy talking about manure phosphorus somewhere else. Of course, those that are in the Midwest have heard all this push about micronutrients lately, the last 3, 4, 5 years, especially when prices for corn and soybean were high. Historically, we have seen infrequent responses of soybean or corn, except zinc, in the mostly loam or heavier soils of the corn belt. Iron chlorosis, of course, is a problem when we have calcareous soils, but we have shown that with fertilization, there's not much we can do. It's not practical. So we decided not to work with this in this project. And then molybdenum, there was some research in the United States, in Iowa, in the 60s, that shows unless you have, in these soils, unless you have pH less than 5.52, it's not a problem. And then all farmers should line, you know. Of course, they shouldn't have a soil with pH 5.2. So we are not working with molybdenum either. The glyphosate manganese issue, you know, all the firestorm that came up from Indiana, that wasn't Brad Jordan's fault. There were some research in Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and we have not seen the problem yet. But anyway, we included manganese in our work. We have no interpretation for micros, soil or tissue test in Iowa, except for zinc in corn, and that's mostly old data from the 60s and 50s. And then interpretation for micros in other north central states, either they are none, they are not crop specific, or they are very old, and few know where they came from. That's the case. So we put together a consortium of several companies and the Iowa Soybean Association to work in this project. It was a discovery project. We were not interested in testing products, testing times of application or rates or things like that. It was okay. We have 1.5 years discussions. Where we got at this consensus, we want to apply something that we know if there is a need, we see a response. So we sprayed twice, V6 and R2, R3. Those were the products that in those 1.5 years discussions we agree on the rates to apply. They didn't want to use any adjuvant, and we used 140 liters of water for the spraying. This is some of the things we did. We wanted to reduce variability. We work in plast with classical methods. These are the soils, typical of Iowa, Illinois, western Nebraska, southern Minnesota. Essentially, we have no sandy soils. We do have, but they are not good, you know, and they're not very common in row crop areas. And I had one or two farmers that wanted to work, but then the companies balked it because the history of yields were not too good there. So we didn't have it. But here you have the clay, organic matter, pH, EC, et cetera. One thing we did, we analyzed for soil micros by several methods. So one of the things we did with copper here, manganese and zinc, we used the DTPA, which is the standard approved method for the north central region, except Michigan and some other states. Many labs are using it because it's much easier than the DTPA, and of course you get PK or kind of things in there. And this is what we found, which is the same that others are finding. I think Dan Kaiser and Dory were in Kansas are finding the same thing. There were more or less a correlation for copper. Absolutely nothing for manganese. This confirms some NCR13 work that we've done before. All this was measured with ICP. And then for zinc, there is a correlation between the two. The interesting things, again, this is not new. This was seen before, but not that I know, at least in the region. the relation with pH, because we have calcareous soils there, and the DTPA, sorry, the DTPA extraction goes down with increasing pH. That, of course, across all things. However, for the malic, it goes up. So it's obviously that one of the two is not working right. So these are some of the interpretation we have in the north central region. And what I did, these are not sufficiency ranges, okay? Be careful with that. These are, I just look at what we have in the state and say, okay, who is saying that we need more than that, okay? So the range in the region was 0.25 to 2 for boron. There was agreement apparently on no data for copper and manganese, and then for zinc, these are the numbers that we have. So then according to these interpretations, this is what we would have expected. So either a response at 1 or 42 of the sites, depending on what are the two extremes you use, none for copper, none for manganese, no response for copper or manganese, and then either 4 or a 35 sites for zinc. Now, these are the results. No soybean grain yield increase at any of 42 trials. We have about 30 strip trials with a mixture. There was one increase in one and a decrease in the other. We had 24 sites that are not talking about it with application to the soil, no response at any. Okay, so, however, in one site, which, by the way, had the highest yield, there was a yield decrease. And then when we do this statistic across sites each year, there was a small decrease for the mixture. So when I speak to farmers or consultants in Iowa at this stage, I say, okay, let's stop here, let's go have beer, you know. But there are a couple of things that are interesting to talk about. These are just a summary of the yields, so you have an idea of the yield levels and the responses. As I said, there was a small decrease from the mixture in both years. I don't know why, because there was the burning in two, three of the sites a little bit, and the others we couldn't see anything. So I really don't know what happened there. Now, we did increase the concentration of the micros in the grain. Okay? For some reason, as others have found, I think in Indiana, it's tough to get that manganese tonic into for some reason. I don't know why. And in the application to soil, it's the same thing. Now, is this important? I don't know. Some say it is, you know, for nutrition, but also show that what we apply went into the plant. Okay. Now, these are some of the interpretations that we are comparing to, and in this case, again, these are not sufficiency ranges. We just look at what we have in the north central region, and then we look, of course, at Benton Jones, you know, and Bryce and all this. So we come up, okay, for boron, some people say we need more than 21 or higher. Others say we need 55 or higher, something like that. This is what it is, okay? These are not ranges. So we should have seen a response at either none or 40 sites for boron. Copper at 39 or 42. Manganese at none or all 42. And zinc at 2 or 42 sites. So no wonder some people in the Midwest are saying that 3/4 of the corn and soybean in Iowa are deficient in all kind of things. Of course, if we look at these things, that's what we're doing in this work. Now, did soil and tissue test agree? And this is the very bad news for us, researchers or labs. Nothing, zero, except for manganese. For manganese, we have the plant manganese at V6 or the leaves at R2, R3. There was some correlation, bad, but there wasn't correlation. The other was absolutely nothing. Now, of course, if the levels are too high and there is no luxury uptake, you could expect that. But I don't think that's the case. Did the tissue test at V6 and R2 or 3 agree? Kind of. See, yes, significant, but not too well, not too good. Now, of course, we cannot tell what's better because we didn't have a response. What it is clear is that the Melic 3 doesn't work for manganese. And here I just put the plant manganese here on the left and the leaf manganese on the right with the Melic. I mean, you saw that with the DTPA there was a relation. Not great, but there was a relation. Okay. Now, for copper, I'm not showing the data, even though Andrew gave me 10 more minutes, but because I don't have time. It was intermediate. See, the copper was between the the manganese and the zinc. You know, seems that there is a correlation, but not that. For the zinc, we did see that if we combine pH, okay, and DTPA, we can get a better estimate from Melick. And that, you know, there are a couple of labs, you know, that's what they're doing. See? They don't want to use the DTPA, okay? So they do the Melick, then they use some correlation, you know? Okay, well, I don't know. Of course, if you ask soil testing guys, they will say, no, this is horrible. But that's what they are doing. So, could you blame the foliar application? Foliar application is not efficient. I don't think so. We should have seen some responses the way we did it. If there was efficiency, the grain in the grain was increased by the application of the V6 and an R2R3. But also, I said, we have somebody, a postdoc, is summarizing these 24 site years that we application to the soil with a starter and banded, broadcast, all kind of things. No response in any in Iowa. So I think that just we don't need micros. For soybean, at least. So, conclusions, very unlikely corn and soybean yield response to micros in Iowa. I'm sorry, I wanted to do this so then I could focus, okay, we're going to see some responses. So now let's look at products, rates, you know, time of application. What I'm going to do now? No agreement between soil and tissue tests at assessing sufficiency and predicting yield response. We didn't see yield response, but obviously they would not agree. We couldn't develop interpretation due to the lack of yield increases. Now, some of the lowest of the published values could be preliminary approximation for Iowa and the region. So this is what we are planning to see. We are harvesting about 17 more trials. And by the way, we have data in corn. It's the same story. So I'm hoping that we could have some tentative interpretations. And we have a project with five states of the North Central region with the North Central Soybean Research Program. We are planning to write some kind of white paper or regional paper about micros in the next year or year and a half. So this is the story. I did very good, didn't I? Great. Thank you. Yes, Tony.
It's a great talk, but I'm just kind of wondering, the problem with all of the micronutrient application stuff is the spatial variability in the soil. So forget yield responses, right? Just look at what the leaf tissue tests are telling you, and then is there any correlation at all between the leaf tissue tests at any stage of development with grain yield in that plot? So in other words, instead of looking at your data as a response to treatment, forget it. The soil is variable. And so within, you know, the plot, and just forget treatments, is there any relationship anywhere with yield if you ignore the treatments and micronutrient concentration?
In this plot, it's none. And in the P&K, it's not good either. That's why I keep saying, I'm sorry, some of my guys may not like it, soil test results are related to relative yield or yield response, not to yield. We forget about that. Okay? Even for nitrogen, sometimes. Yes. And then now with the big data and all that stuff, people forget about it. See, I think it's important. Now, this is something that he's working on. We have these three trials. So we did some grid sampling, you know, we sample by zone, so we have the yield map. He's going to be working in GIS during the winter, so we are looking at that variability too. So that's what I can tell you. We also are working measuring removal in grain because people are asking for that. So we have all kind of data looking at in the foliar. Of course, it doesn't do much in the soil, but in the ones that we are applying to soil, we have very good numbers now about removal and the impact. In some, we have 3 years of corn soybean rotation, so we will be able to say something about the removal in grain, if that is even detectable in the soil or not. So we are working on that. Yeah, I know. Yes, there was a Alan. Okay.
Yeah, the slide showed on the increase in the of micronutrients in the grain, and you kind of, you know, what does this mean? One of the things we've seen, particularly if you move over to wheat, and where you're trying to get more vigorous quality seed wheat, if I can increase the zinc content in that seed, I have a much better germ.
Well, this is the...
There are some plays here that aren't necessarily...
Yes. And then, of course, the soybean grain goes to a variety of things. This is the only reason I'm here standing talking about this. Because if not, the companies that helped me would have killed me. See? That's the only reason. See? By the way, I should say that. I forgot to put it here. The Iowa Soybean Association, Wilbur Ellis, Brandt, Winfield, and Nature's Alpine, those were the ones that helped me with this. And we are now scratching our heads where we go next in Iowa. I don't know. Most likely we have to go to the traditional thing, those weird situations where microbes can be a problem. In my opinion, what some are doing and beating the bush of the high yields, and that's the next limiting step, it will not happen. It may happen with chloride, but with these microbes, I don't think it will. So in my opinion, that's what we would do. Okay, let's look at perimaterial soils, erosion, organic matter, calcareous, things like that. Okay, let's see where in those cases we might need microbes. Now, in Iowa, my question is it worth doing that? Better go to another state. I don't know.